IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 95 of the Killing It Podcast. This is Carl. I'm joined by Dave and Ryan, as usual. So I had fun yesterday.
Yeah.
My internet went out. What are you going to do when the cloud goes out?
Well, especially when we're all stuck at home. that's my lifeline to the world.
So I run down to the Residence Inn. They won't rent me a room because I'm from in town. I have no explanation and no time to argue because I had to do a webinar. So I ran down to the Marriott, the Courtyard, and they rented me a room. So for $93,
it's so weird because it's the same chain. Right, the same owners, and like one of them.
Yeah, that's so weird.
I'm thinking they would be glad to have any customers, whether they were local or not. I mean, that is like the Airbnb and VRBO guys. They are doing a good job of advertising in town adventures. In other words, you won't get on an airplane these days, but would you like to get outside of your own four boring walls? And I think, heck yeah, that sounds like a really good idea.
Well, and if I were going to do that, I think I'd rather go to the Residence Inn, but I guess I got to go to one in a different city, right?
Yeah.
Because they got a full kitchen, right? So I
have
an endless pot of coffee going, put stuff in the refrigerator.
But, you know, apparently your money is no good here. They will not allow you to be a paying customer. That seems like a curious strategy in today's travel world.
Exactly. What do we know?
Very cool.
But you're back online, Carl. So welcome back to the world of the connected.
I know. Well, and I do have to say my home internet's just slightly faster than the Courtyard.
Well, I would hope so.
Even the enhanced version.
And you know, one day, that 5G that shows up on your phone there will actually mean something. And you might actually have mobile access to super broadband, but not yet.
But we're not getting into that topic today. That's not a topic for today.
No, but before we dive into topics, we'd like to thank our sponsor. Do you have headaches with customers texting your technicians? Gazinsa's Tixt brings your texting conversation into service tickets. Set your MSP apart by allowing your customers to communicate the way they want without losing control of the conversation. Since text messages are 10 times more likely to be opened than an email, you can get your tickets to resolved faster. An essential tool for supporting a growing remote workforce. Go to www.tixt.us to sign up for the free 30-day trial. So gents, back to Azure and updating a little bit on Microsoft and the modular data centers. They announced this last fall, and it's Azure in a shipping container that you deliver right to anywhere they need it to go. And
this is not the submarine.
No, this is not the submarine.
Which
runs all the Azure Stack Hub stuff and can run disconnected or connected via satellite. So the idea here is that they can roll out these data centers anywhere they need on demand. Are they crazy or are they genius? That's the question for the board.
So the interesting thing is I remember seeing a video about this like 10 years ago. So this is like the latest version. This is kind of an update. I think they might be getting ready for deployment or something because they have been talking about it for a while.
And they've tried before. This isn't their first attempt. They've actually been playing with this since back in 2008. So this isn't their first try. Why do they keep taking a swing at it?
Well, I think, you know, we mentioned the submarine. It wasn't really a submarine, but this is probably got to be related to putting the data center under the ocean. And, you know, so part of what they learned there is, well, maybe if we seal these things up and don't muck with them above water, we'll also have fewer failures and so forth, because that was one of the lessons that they learned last time.
Well, see, a few years ago when the concept of containerization became popular, it was discussed exclusively in the context of a virtual slash software world. In other words, I will take your OS, I will take your server stack, your virtual machines, all of the operating tools that are required to deploy an environment, and then you will run that virtually in somebody else's cloud. Microsoft is just taking that one logical step further to containerize the physical assets as well as the software configuration, server, storage, network, heating, cooling, all of that stuff physically enclosed inside of a shipping container. My answer to this is I think it is absolutely brilliant. In a modular world, and a term of much debate among us, in an edge computing world where we keep taking technology and putting the brains out there without having to bring the data back into the central data center, run the processing, redistribute it. If the on a micro scale, the way that we design servers, right? If you can put the data physically closer to the processor, then you eliminate microseconds of lag. And that can accelerate the performance of a data or a calculation environment. Well, this is just taking that same thing and macroizing it, taking it out into the physical world. I think that organizations and locations will find that you don't need to only have one mega data center that lives somewhere in the woods of central Washington in order to run a Microsoft or an Amazon or anybody else's data center in the cloud. It can be where you are and eliminate all latency and lag. Technologically, that's interesting. Financially, plus, I think that's brilliant.
Plus, it makes so much sense from like anybody trying to figure out the hybrid thing. So you're running a large data center. You want to consider start moving sizable amounts of data into Azure. We'll bring out the shipping container, right? Like and put it nearby. And I'm sure they're thinking of ways of connecting the two in, and then I'm using a local connection to migrate my stuff into Azure, and then I can then take that shipping container away, right, and send it off to the data center, and so it allows you to do that kind of migration in really interesting ways. And so, like, I see this as like I want to put a data center into this place, or as you said, I may need a data center location somewhere temporarily, or I want to move my data closer to. I see this making the data center more dynamic. Not everybody's going to want this. I mean, of course.
Yeah, I don't need one.
No, exactly. I don't want one in my backyard. But
I work with people in other countries. And I have to say that the two things that popped into my head, one was obviously the military would now have the ability to take a massive data center and stick it wherever they need one, potentially very close to the action. The other thing is, a lot of developing countries could suddenly and instantly have access to some very cool technology. I'm sure this is not sold as a hardware device. This is sold by the hour or
as a service, right? As a service in some way.
Yeah, as some kind of a service. Question is this relevant for the small business space?
I think it will be, right? So one of our clients sells to government agencies, education institutions, et cetera, in coastal Carolinas, right? So north and south. And those places are, as you know, unfortunately, quite vulnerable to storms. And we feel a little bit like we feel the need in our sales planning process to forecast the weather and make sure that we have corresponding access to inventory for data center assets, because inevitably every year hurricane comes up the coast, we get a call from a client who's like, oh no, the data center just got flooded. Can you resell us a whole bunch of things? Now, we get paid for a whole lot of equipment that goes back into a flooded out data center. And you think, have you guys heard of the concept of redundancy? And are you familiar with this idea of the cloud? But a data center in a box that you could just drive in on the back of a truck into a storm-stricken area, brilliant. Now, in the spirit of our industry, this stuff will re-miniaturize. right? Like I remember the movie Hidden Figures and how a floppy disk based computer was the size of an office building. And now one more powerful than that goes with me everywhere in my pocket. Eventually this shipping container will then become the size of a Volkswagen. That'll be much more compelling for a small business. I think in small and medium sized industries and government institutions, many managed service providers will find special events, sporting events, political conventions, storms. There are many use cases where it's like, I just want to stand up a data center for a while.
I've totally got the idea now. We're putting it in a Volkswagen bus. Yeah. Like we're totally taking a Volkswagen bus.
Like, dude, I need a data center.
Exactly. We're totally tricking it out with Azure modular data center gear. And we're driving that sucker across the country.
All right. I've been waiting for an opportunity to do a road show. So maybe this will be it.
By the way, Carl, go out real quick and trademark that website and everything. Do the copyright on that. Because, dude, I need a data center is an awesome business model.
So true.
All righty. It shall be done as soon as we're finished recording this show. All righty. So topic number two, we're talking about a good old friend of ours, net neutrality. You thought it might be dead. But as Dave was telling us before we started recording here, it turns out that with the election, all things that's old is new again. And so net neutrality has a little opportunity for life as we look at the aftermath of political changes that are going on. And it's not just in Georgia, but because the way the Georgia election went, the Democrats are now able to push several things that they've been pretty particularly interested in. And one of those is net neutrality.
And if you're pro net neutrality, you're right with those advocates that are just completely beside themselves excited, because this allows them to control the nominees. It allows them to control the direction. Like, and you know, the anybody who's focused on the idea of net neutrality is looking at this and saying, this is an opportunity to actually put forth some legislation that has a legitimate chance of passing and getting signed into law.
To be honest, this isn't just a left versus right thing. I mean, there are people on the right who are now saying, look, we are being shut out from access to these systems. And so it could be that the time is just right for everybody to say, look, everybody gets access. You can't shut out anybody.
Right.
Well, and in the spirit of our first topic and this one, right? The expensive critical component in most business environments right now, it's not processing, it's not hosting, it's not storage. The critical component that costs a lot of money is bandwidth. It is the ability to get information from here to there. You can write an app in a day. You can deploy it onto a virtual data center in the cloud in an hour. You can stand up a tremendous amount of computing infrastructure and content. But can you get it from point A to point B? And as our economy becomes more work at home or work remote, as we become more video centric, as we become more dependent on e-commerce, all of the things that are coming out as lasting phenomena from 2020 speak to a world of, ooh, if one group of individuals has the ability to pick and choose who is throttled and not, that's not just a how quickly did your video download for your phone? That becomes a critical component to the broader economy, not just politics, the economy at large. I think this is one of those where I think you're right, Carl. This is not going to be a political conversation in 21. This will become an economic and commerce conversation.
I think it wins if it is. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense to have those conversations. Like, I mean, I'm the one who's constantly railing against the broadband problem in general. I'm the one shaking my fist at some of these large providers, going, I don't think you're doing a particularly good job. 5G, lack of broadband access across most of the country, the number of Americans not able to connect. Like, so they're not my favorites anyway. And so, opening possibilities. I'm not looking to say like, let's give them a new way to limit, make money by limiting our access. I am all for net neutrality as
well. And the other thing is, it sort of butts up against access. And so if you say, well, net neutrality is a right, well, that butts right up against, okay, bandwidth is a right and access in general is a right. I mean, there's a lot of people who have learned in the pandemic that their internet sucks, right? That they don't have enough for mom and dad to run their businesses online and the kids to be going to school at the same time. And, you know, you've heard the stories of people like parking in the parking lot next to school so that they can, you know, grab onto the bandwidth.
Last I checked, I get electricity and water delivered to me via like public utilities. I am completely okay with saying I want an internet option for that. We could even go hybrid, right? There's an internet option and that's the minimum. And if private companies want to compete above that, that's fine too. There's hybrid models here. But I think that for me, this situation has really proven that one of the ways that we can address both inequality and, by the way, for me, more importantly, open up more markets is by making sure that connectivity is there. I keep reminding everybody, there's tons of customers you cannot service because they don't have enough broadband or availability of broadband. There's communities you can't service because they don't have broadband. If you're, from my perspective, if you're a small solution provider, you should love the idea of public utility internet because it opens up so many possibilities.
Well, many people complain to me that, you know, my vision of the cloud is very urban centric in that.
Right.
I just say, look, you should put your stuff in the cloud. And they say, well, yeah, but my, you know, 5K upbound pipe is not big enough because right? I live in Wyoming or, you know, Idaho or whatever. I personally would resist the, I don't want something that's particularly government run, but requiring certain minimum bandwidth within certain areas and having it be run by what we call public utilities,
yeah, that
are privately owned. I'm totally right. Cool with that.
Well, this gets back into, you know, the concept of technology as it evolves, right? I grew up in the world of storage, and there once was a world where we all scoffed and said, I can't imagine needing a hard drive that was larger than a gig, because what would you ever fill it up with? And then we did, right? And now we're in this world of, well, why would you ever need more than 25 meg download speed? If you're a user, you can run a Zoom video session on that. I would question that because that's up to 25. And there are certain providers right now that is their essentials package. It is 25 down. Not cool. I don't think that is sufficient. A standard that brings it down. From the user's point of view, we start to look at that and go, why would you need more than 100, 400, 500, right? I turn that around from the other side, right? If Dave's talking about this from the concept of the users we can access, I'm thinking about it from the businesses that can access those users. In a remote working world, I don't need to headquarter my data-driven, technology-centric business in Silicon Valley anymore. Why do I need to? I have ready access to the humans anywhere, everywhere, all the time. Stand up all my employees. I can access all of my customers. But if I put my data center in Wyoming or in Kansas or elsewhere in a rural environment, I am now at a structural disadvantage for servicing my customers because I don't have sufficient bandwidth.
I will point out, we have much to learn from our cousins in Australia who did the national broadband a few years ago. And everybody whined and complained that, you know, their minimums are not enough and da-da-da-da-da. But the thing with the minimums is that once they laid the wires down, they didn't just lay down the minimal wiring.
You're gonna
dig a trench and lay down fiber. Guess what? Along with the minimums comes the maximums. And so I think that it's one of these things where it might be time for us to say, look, as long as we got our coffers open, let's see about doing what we did with federal highways and say, we need a US national broadband. And that would be a gold rush for small IT providers.
Oh, it'd be amazing. It would be amazing. And that's where I really want providers to think about that is, you know, think about your, again, this is where your voice matters, right? come at it from that perspective. If think about it like roads, water, and electricity. Those things are what empowers your business. Now imagine broadband delivered that way.
Yep.
Awesome to me.
I totally co-sign that idea. Right now sounds like a really good place where we recognize the need. We've got the money available in theory. Let's make this a public works program for a modern world.
Yep.
Excellent. Alrighty. Very topic, good concepts.
Topic number three.
So topic number three, we're going to transition from the digital world of transit and goods into the physical world. So specifically, we're linking to an article highlighting how Amazon has just completed the purchase of a number of jets. They bought 11 airplanes, which in a world where Amazon is as big as they are, you think just 11 airplanes? But what starts small with them always gets proved out as a business case, and it eventually gets much larger. If you read through the article, you'll find that they have been leasing airplanes. They've just purchased 11 with a vision that within a year-ish, they're going to have 85 of them. Question is why, and how does this factor into our remote e-commerce, everywhere working world? Amazon's basic business philosophy here is we sell everything to everyone everywhere, and we utilize third-party shipping and distribution for the physical logistics. And now they are making the business case, at least for the backbone elements of that physical distribution process. If we owned it, we could do it faster, more cost-effectively, and we could get more of those brown cardboard boxes into your garage, stacking up to the never-ending piles of cardboard in my house, right? They could do that more cost-effectively if they own the planes. I fast forward this 2 years in my brain, 5 years, and I think, wow, this is a very, very big idea, and the folks at FedEx and UPS should be a little bit scared. What do you guys think about the philosophy, and what do you think about the execution from your point of view?
Well, the why now is basically the planes are on sale, right? They're right? These are used 767s. They're 50% off today only. But it's also, I mean, I think the timing of what's happened in the last 12 months, I mean, not just Amazon, but all online suppliers have just seen their businesses explode. And, you know, Target, 100% growth of e-commerce in the last year. I mean, somebody has to deliver that. And if Amazon can't get the capacity they need out of UPS and FedEx, well, guess what? They need to build their own.
Well, or every little bit you can do to save money in your delivery pipe is a little bit more that you're able to, you know, to keep in your pocket. And so there's that too. So this isn't just a, hey, we're trimming down to because we're not getting enough volume. It's the, we want to make a little bit more money. And by the way, they're really good at making a little bit more money.
Yeah. It is an interesting choice to go with the 767s because, first of all, these could be very long haul, right? This is what you fly overseas. And second, there's a lot of airports that can't land these things. So, you know, at some point, there's some strategy of this being from specific points to specific points. And so I don't know that it's as obvious as we make it sound in terms of what their strategy is.
Well, it could just be the cross country. I mean, they also use cross country. So that's the kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, cross country or international, right? So where you need to move something from the U.S. to those long hauls. Like, I can see obvious bits of we need to connect Seattle, Texas, and New York, as well as our London distribution center, our Frankfurt one, like, and we're just going to move that stuff with our own planes. So it makes perfect sense. I mean, this is one of those bits where it's just like when you have giant piles of buckets of money, you can move into any space you'd like and try it out and start experimenting. Maybe this is just them figuring out the economics. They're the kind of company that can just buy it on a credit card, right?
Like, exactly. Well, then if I needed to move a huge data center in a box from one place to another, who are you going to call?
Right. Somebody with a 767, thank you very much, right? But that's the thing, right? I think the logistics of this is they're not trying to fly an airplane to your local municipal airport for delivery. Backbones only that they will then connect to third party. But if you read through the article, and Carl, you've made this point on several other technology topics that we've talked about in the past, a really, really good idea will stay a good idea, and it won't become real in the real world until somebody with all the money gets in and starts to make this a really good idea, right? Linux became a big idea in this world because IBM said so, and IBM was big enough and they started to deploy it, and everybody else went, well, okay, then I think I will.
It's safe now.
Exactly. It's now safe. And a lot of that open stack stuff that we now take for granted in the world of internet technologies, that became real when Amazon got in and said, let me put my muscle behind this. Well, I'm not suggesting that buying up used 767s is about to be a big thing. But through this article, you start to see, okay, they own the planes, and then they're going to buy autonomous trucks, and then they're going to deliver with drones, hopefully a burrito really soon. But they're going to start from the top down investing in these new technologies for the physical logistics world, and then those things will take off. I think drones are a brilliant idea, but I don't have the money Amazon has, so I can't make that a market. They can, and it looks like they're going to.
They also have the ability to, you know, try drones in Arizona, try delivery robots in California, try, you know, different kinds of warehousing outfits. And we've talked about them buying up used malls that are shrinking.
Right. And I would be remiss if I didn't observe the other thing that they did in 2020 that was their big move. When Bezos told the shareholders, you know, hold on to your hats, sit down for a minute. I'm taking all of our profit and I'm invested in COVID protection. One of the things that he's doing here is he is building an end-to-end vaccinated, managed, you know, whole supply chain that every portion of it, he can send things through the entire network of Amazon stuff and know that they are able to control every bit of it. And they can do so in a way that is protected not only from theoretically COVID-19, but theoretically they could go to anything, that they are able to build an entire network themselves that they control every bit of and can assure customers, if needed, of the movement of that. Think about what they could do.
So it's still January. So are we ready to speculate on what they're going to do with delivery, automatic, you know, whatever, self-driving cars, trucks, robots in 2021?
I have an opinion on the autonomous trucks, right? I think that autonomous cars are a really good idea. I think drones and robots will eventually be the mass distribution of it. But the first opportunity is going to be long haul over the road autonomous trucks. And I think you're going to start to see more than laboratory experiments on that stuff in 2021. One would be surprised when you actually get into it, just how many long haul over the road trucks there are on the roads just of the United States, right? There are tens and hundreds of thousands of semi trucks out there. That's a massive market, and it's only going to take just a tiny bit of access for them to make a real business out of that. I think that's the first place they'll go.
Yeah, and I still look at this and say, like, I feel like that's a piece, as I said, I think it's a piece of their distribution. I mean, I love to go wire. At some point, they may move into more healthcare bits, and you'll want the ability to move your own stuff on your own schedules, on your own controls. Like if you're moving, I don't know, vaccines around, you know, you're going to need ways of doing that where you control every bit of it. And so I see, like, you look at it and say, like, this is strategic for the markets, not just that they're in, but that they may be considering.
You know, it's interesting because I hearken back to the days when GE had all of these divisions, and if they couldn't be number one or number two in something, then they didn't, they just got out. I think we're kind of getting ready for Amazon to say, we have a healthcare division and this is what they do. And then we have a delivery division. We have a, this division, at some point, putting it all under the same umbrella just seems unmanageable. but it's yeah. just me.
Yeah, just because they can afford it doesn't mean they can
run I'm totally fine with having that much money and having an uncontrollable problem. I'm totally just want to go on record there for everybody that I'm really okay with that. I'm ready to take on that challenge.
Exactly. And I own 2 shares of their stock. So, you know.
Hey, you're a shareholder. You are reaping the reward.
Diversification in real time.
All righty. Well, we had fun and we got a little education. And so that will do it for episode 95 of the
Killing It
podcast. Shall we do that again?
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.